This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Thanks for tuning in to Eco Radio KC. The news for today include a story on controversial expansion plans for a Lone Jack, Missouri meat company, Valley Oaks Steak Company. Those were approved June 15, 2018 by the Missouri Department of Natural Resources. 7/26/18, news reports are those plans have been halted by the Missouri Administrative Hearing Commission until the commission can make a full decision on all factors, including environmental concerns, jobs, and the effect on property values. The meat company wants to expand to 7 times their current size to just under 7,000 cattle feedlot and processing plant. That decision will be made on all factors by the Missouri Administrative Hearing Commission, and expansion plans will stop currently. Zero Hour is a national youth climate movement, the New York Times reports, and they held marches on 7/21/18. Zero Hour's website, which you can find at zerohour.org, reports activity in St. Louis, however none so far in Kansas City. The Lawrence, Kansas Journal World reports today that a Lawrence, Kansas City Advisory Board, the Sustainability Advisory Board, has voted to make the issue of single-use plastics one of the board's priorities. Their goal is to reduce the amount of plastic trash in general. Several community groups addressed the issue to the board, including Lawrence Ecology Teams United in Sustainability, or LETUS, the Wakarusa Group of the Sierra Club, the Sustainability Action Network, and students and staff of Kennedy Elementary School. While Scott Pruitt, former head of the EPA, launched full frontal assault on all things environmental, Ryan Zinke, our Interior Secretary, has been quietly and steadily opening the door to corporate exploitation of public lands for fossil fuel and nuclear energy production by working to shrink many national monuments and parks to allow mining and drilling. Now, Ryan Zinke, the Interior Secretary, wants to get the Endangered Species Act, which protects wildlife habitat that may stand in the way of energy extraction. Electric city buses are cleaner and less expensive to operate than fossil fuel-operated city buses, and Dallas, Texas is the most recent city to fully utilize electric city buses. Now, let's go to Eco Radio KC.
Thank you. That was Teresa Wilkie helping out with the news. Good evening, Kansas City. Your old pal Mike Murphy here on 90.1 FM, KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. We've got a really fun show planned for you this evening. We've got an author in the studio. She's written a new book called Adventure New Zealand, Beneath the Totaras. And it's Dr. Siglin Othmer. And this is a sequel to a book she wrote in 2012 called Whims, Wits, and Whiskers, a Californian pet tale. That a good chunk of that book takes place in Parkville, Missouri. And Dr. Othmer is a resident of Parkville, Missouri. Is that right, Dr. Othmer?
That's right. And I love to live in Parkville, Missouri, by the Missouri River. It's so beautiful, so I decided that my characters would come for their very first show to Parkville, Missouri. And they tried out the river tracks, but they decided the trains were too noisy, so they went up the hill to Wrist Lake and had a show there.
That's great. So the they we're talking about are the characters in Dr. Othmer's books, which are they're, I guess, children's books, but not little. I mean, they're not, I mean, they're adults will read them.
Yes, it's basically a book for pet lovers of all ages.
Uh-huh.
They are chapter books,
right?
So they can be read to children and enjoyed by adults as
right.
well. And my characters, Mike, are rescue animals. There are 5 dogs and 2 cats. And they decided that they want to do with life more than just sit at home and be pets. So they go on adventure and become artists.
Right. So this the new book, this is brand new book out, right?
Yes.
This is about their adventure going to New Zealand.
Yes.
And this was inspired by a trip you took there?
Mm-hmm. We took a cruise to New Zealand, and I fell in love with the land, with its pristineness, with areas that were not touched for 300 years. It's amazing, New Zealand. So the inspiration that my characters get came from hummingbirds. The hummingbirds would tell them that there is an endangered species in New Zealand that needs rescuing, or awareness needs to be raised that they will not go extinct.
Hmm.
So here we go.
And so that endangered species is?
Is the kiwi bird, a bird without wings.
And the kiwi, I mean, is truly endangered?
Yes, it is, very much so, like many other species. I mean, my stories are based on reality, just clothed in characters that are fun to be with.
So you started out talking about New Zealand, talking about it as this pristine place. How could these kiwis be endangered?
Good question. There are pests that were introduced to New Zealand way back on ships, and they eat the kiwis because they cannot fly away. They have no wings.
So like rats, that kind of thing?
Rats and stoats, which is a ferret. Very dangerous to the kiwi birds. Very dangerous.
Wow. And so... I think what you're saying is, like, this is nothing new. This is since
long time.
Since settlers.
They call them the killer immigrants.
Yeah.
These rats and wild cats and wild dogs and the stoats. Stoats are ferrets.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So this has been going on for centuries then.
Correct.
And but it's really starting to catch up now.
Yes.
So does New Zealand have like the equivalent of an endangered species list?
Right. They have programs, kiwi sanctuaries, and they have ways to eradicate stoats in certain areas by killing them,
mm-hmm.
So that we save the kiwis.
Wow. And so this book you have about these wonderful pets, they're dogs. The protagonists in your book are dogs and cats. And
5 dogs,
uh-huh.
and 2 cats, and they are cousins. And the reason they are cousins is that their masters had rescued them all.
Ah.
So that, and they were my children.
Uh-huh.
They were all real animals in my family.
Great.
3 dogs in San Francisco area. 2 dogs from Pennsylvania that come for family reunion, and 2 cats from Hollywood.
Wow.
Yeah. And they come for family reunions in the first book. In the second book, it's Thanksgiving, where the family reunion happens, and there may be more.
Wow.
I'm planning on 4.
Wow.
A series.
So this first book that came out in 2012, a good portion of this takes place in Parkville, Missouri.
Yes, yes.
And that's, I mean, so all the pet names are the actual names of pets,
yes.
that you have rescued over the years.
Mr. Guinness, the pit bull, Rosie, the Tibetan Terrier, and Lexi, a Shih Tzu. Then there's George from Pennsylvania, and Bailey.
Mm.
And the Hollywood cats are Miles and Cosmo.
Mm.
Real animals. And Lexi is still alive.
Right. That's great.
Yep.
And so in this book, they go on an adventure to New Zealand after much debate about whether, you know.
It's a long trip.
Yeah.
And they get well received on a sheep farm. where their condor, their motivator, and how do you say, their teacher really, she drops them at the sheep farm. And the sheep farm is special in as the sheep that are raised there are the sheep that are of no value in New Zealand, which are the sheep that are born with color.
Really?
If there's a black sheep or pink sheep or bay sheep in New Zealand, where white sheep business is big,
right,
they get killed at birth. And I know for a fact, because when we went to New Zealand, we shared a tour with a farmer who did just that.
Really?
So my wow. books are all reality-based, and this is one reality that came into play with my book. So they come to this colored sheep farm, a multicolored sheep farm, and get well-received. And, of course, the sheep who know that they're only alive to the goodness of this farmer, they welcome an awareness for the plight of the Kiwi. That's how the story goes.
That's great. And one other thing to mention about the book, your daughter, a lot of our listeners might be aware of, Julia Othmer, singer, songwriter, performer, and she did a couple of songs for that companion to the book.
Yes.
You want to tell us about?
I would love to talk about that. Yeah. One song is called Believe. And it is a song that the hummingbirds sing on long distances. So they encourage their young ones not to lose courage to fly along. It's called Believe.
Mm.
And the second song, the lyrics are intrinsic to the book. The second song is about we get together in all weather and we get along and we have respect for each other.
That's great. Well, why don't we listen to Believe right now? And anything else you want to say about that, or should I just hit play?
Hit play.
You know the world, it keeps on rolling on by. It is so beautiful from up in the sky. There is so much to see. So many places to be. Where do I really want to go? Tells me and go with the flow. Oh.
got to believe.
Yes, by Julia Othma and James Lundy. James put it all together.
That's wonderful. It's a wonderful recording.
Thank you.
I'd be surprised if you knew this, but "You Gotta Believe" was Tug McGraw's slogan for the New York Mets in the 1973 World Series.
It was.
Yeah. "You Gotta Believe" is what he said.
Kept repeatedly.
Really? Just like that same syntax, too. Not "you have to believe," but "you gotta believe." Yeah.
And that's true for all of us, with projects, et cetera.
That's right. So, but we're talking to Dr. Siglind Othmer, and she's written this book called "Adventure in New Zealand: Beneath the Totaras." What's Totaras?
A totara is a very tall tree, like our oak trees, mm-hmm. that lives for a very long time. It has sort of needle-like leaves, and the Maori, the indigenous people of New Zealand, made canoes out of it. It has antioxidant properties if you grind up the rind, the bark. And it's also very important for the water retention in the New Zealand landscape.
Ah.
So if they would get rid of totaras, it's like getting rid of the Amazon.
Right.
It's very, very important. And the totaras play a large role in my story.
Really?
So I figured I'd take that word into the title, even though nobody knows what a totara is, but they will.
That's great.
Yes.
So I was saying to you in the green room what I like about this book, like the plot of this story is about these pets raising awareness about the plight of the kiwi. And in essence, that in fact is what the book is intending to do as well, by couching it in this story like this.
Mm-hmm.
But so everything is, you've taken a bunch of facts and woven this adventure out of those facts.
With my characters.
Right.
That are animals, but really not.
Yeah, right. The characters are all kind of likable, relatable, kind of the
animals. Oh, yes, Mr. Guinness is the artistic director. He was a corporate dog, Silicon Valley, and he got kind of tired of that life and became an artist and manages his troupe, you see? And Lexi and Rosie live with him. They're kind of under him. But George, they're a little more robust from Pennsylvania. And Bailey, they are more earthy.
Uh-huh.
Earthy. And the cats from Hollywood speak French. They are extraordinaire and very special artists that know a thing or two.
Yeah.
Well, they speak French. There's a glossary in the book.
So it's a lot of knowledge being slipped in here. You're being taught a little French thrown in there. You're being taught a little bit about working together. Or certainly, the value of art is very a very strong theme throughout the book.
Yes, they want to be artists and they want to perform for the world because their experience in Parkville was extraordinary. They had a large audience of wild animals and they sang and danced and played sort of a ball game. So they want to repeat that in New Zealand. So they need to think of a new show that would be particular for New Zealand and particular for the cause, because it would be a benefit show for the Kiwis. That's how they start out, to raise awareness about their plight.
Yeah, that's great. All right, I think we're going to take a break, and then when we come out of that, I'm going to have you maybe read a selection from the book, if you'd
I'd
be
love
so
that.
Gracious. Thank you so much. All right, well, we're going to knock out a couple of messages, and we'll be back.
The KKFI-sponsored conference, Kicking the Coke Habit and Expanding Democracy for All, features workshops on dark money, climate change, immigration, health care, and much more, plus three great speakers, Duke University's Nancy McLean, author of Democracy and Change, Yale's Jason Stanley, How Propaganda Works, and Hellraiser Jim Hightower with music by Danny Cox, spoken word by The Recipe, and much more, August 10th and 11th at UMKC and All Souls UU Church. Details and registration at kkfi.org/conference. Proceeds support KKFI Radio.
PeaceWorks KC is hosting their annual Hiroshima Nagasaki Remembrance at the Lagoon at Luce Park on Sunday, August 5th, with potluck at 6:30 and program at 7:30. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Bridging an urban-rural divide in the Midwest. On this current cast. When excess fertilizer or manure washes off farm fields, it can contaminate water that supplies nearby cities. But farmers may hesitate to change their ways because it can affect the bottom line. Using less fertilizer can reduce crop yields, and other solutions, such as buffer strips, may require taking land out of production. So the cleanup often falls to cities.
So that sets up the potential for conflict right there.
Michael Taboris of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs says the issue is often approached as us versus them. So to facilitate cooperation, he suggests creating decision-making bodies made up of both urban and rural stakeholders.
To solve it as a collective problem.
Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell University's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
So, in order to make a benefit show stick to the New Zealand theme, Mr. Guinness was on the computer conducting his own research, pulling up multiple screens, scrolling through websites, letting images blink at him until finally, "Excellent, I've got it." He threw up his front paws and turned around. "Bailey, everyone, please come. Someone wake up George. What is it?" I found a Maori story about the Kiwis," Mr. Guinness said. "Kiwis, the sports team?" Lexi asked, "or the kiwi fruit?" "No, this is about the kiwi birds." Mr. Guinness smiled at his cousins. He nudged the computer screen in Bailey's direction. "Please, read the Maori story out loud." Bailey skimmed the first paragraph and looked at Mr. Guinness with skeptical eyes. Then she looked back at the screen. "Shall I?" She raised her shoulders. "Yes," he insisted. "Those names?" Bailey said, "they are very long." "I'll do my best." Bailey sat down and began. The cats, Lexi, Rosie, Mr. Guinness, and even George were at full attention. "The story is called Why the Kiwi Lives on the Forest Floor." "Why does he?" George asked. "She's getting to that." Rosie hopped up and down. Bailey cleared her throat. "One day, a long time ago, the master of the forest, Tanemahuta, was walking through the woods. He noticed that his trees looked sick. A plague of insects that lived on the forest floor was eating them. Tanemahuta told his brother, Tanehokahoka, the master of sky, storms, and wind, what was happening to the trees. Tanehokahoka decided to help his brother. He called on all the birds to come for a meeting. Tanemahuta said to them, 'The ground bugs are eating all the trees. They're destroying them. I need one of you birds to give up your life in the sky and in the treetops to come and live down on the forest floor and eat these bugs so the trees will be saved. Who will do this?' Tanemahuta and Tanehokahoka waited and listened." Bailey paused and took a deep breath before she continued. "Not a single bird spoke up. Tanehokahoka turned to the Tui bird. 'Tui, will you come down from the forest roof?' Tui said, 'Oh no, Tanehokahoka, it's too dark down there. I'm afraid of the dark.' Tanehokahoka turned to Pukeko. 'Pukeko, will you forget about blooms and sweet berries and come down from the forest roof to eat the bugs?' Pukeko said, 'Oh no. The ground is too damp. I don't like getting my feet wet.' Tanehokahoka then turned to Pipiwarora and asked, 'Pipiwarora, will you come down from the forest roof?' Pipiwarora said, 'Oh no, I'm too busy building a nest for my family high up in this tree.' Tanehokahoka knew that if none of the birds came down from the forest roof, all the trees would die, and the birds would have nowhere to live. At last, Tanahokahoka turned to Kiwi and said, "Please, will you come down and save the trees?" Kiwi looked around at his family and at the open sky. He then looked at the cold, damp earth and turned to Tanahokahoka and said, "Yes." Bailey looked up from the screen at her cousins, all set at attention, eyes wide open, mesmerized, soaking up the story, and Lexi teared up. "You are a wonderful reader," Mr. Guinness praised Bailey. "Please continue." Bailey shook out her blonde fur and focused once again on the screen. Tanemahuta, the master of the forest, and Tanahokahoka, the master of the sky, storms, and wind, were very happy because this little bird would save the trees. Tanemahuta said, "Kiwi, if you do this, you will have to grow strong legs and lose your beautiful wings and colorful feathers so you blend in with the color of the forest floor. You will not be able to return to the forest roof and will never see the light of day again." Kiwi took one last look at the sun and whispered, "Goodbye." Sobbing softly, Lexi said, "I love the kiwis." "Gosh," George grunted and swallowed hard. "How gutsy." "There's more," Bailey continued. Tanahokahoka turned to the assembled birds and said, "Tui, because you were too scared, from now on you will wear two white feathers at your throat as the mark of a coward. Pukeku, because you did not want to get your feet wet, you will spend the rest of your life in the swamp. And Pipirarora, because you were too busy building a nest for your own family, you will never build another nest again. Instead, you will have to lay your eggs in other birds' nests. But you, Kiwi, you will become the most well-known and most beloved bird of all." "Those brave kiwis," Lexi wept. Her champagne-colored hair shook. "What they did! We absolutely must save them." George sat down by her. "We will," he said with a deep voice and licked Lexi's back to comfort her. "The kiwi is a hero. We must act and save them." "Who are these New Zealand masters of the forest and sky?" Rosie wondered. "Do they really have so much power? Guinea, do you believe this? It's not really true, is it? It's a tale someone made up. It's a myth, right?" "True or not true, it's so sad," Lexi lamented and buried her nose in George's shoulder. "These birds were so kind and offered the wings to save the trees. And now, when they're in danger, they cannot fly away. What can we do?" "Injustice," George howled. "Injustice. We must act." Bailey kept her cool. She turned to Mr. Guinness. "Could we use this story for our benefit show in New Zealand?" He gave her a big toothy grin. "Excellent, Bailey. Just what I was thinking."
Wow, that's terrific. There's nothing better than hearing an author read her own words, and you certainly put yourself into that. It's wonderful.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So the story of how the kiwi gave up its wings.
Right.
So is there hope for the kiwi?
In reality?
Yes,
or in my story?
In reality.
Yes.
Yeah.
They have kiwi sanctuaries in New Zealand, and there's a preservation list, and it's a big deal. It is a big deal. But my story goes some other place, you see, because the pests that kill the kiwis are going to be, I don't want to give the story
away. Right.
But, you know, killing is not my thing. So they are going to be educated in a very sweet and adventurous and effective way.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well.
Because my story is not about animals. It's about people, really.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
And it's about our society.
Yeah.
And our issues and how we hopefully deal with it.
Yeah. What other issues do you think the book is touched on?
Oh, it's about respect for other people.
For sure.
It is about good food.
Uh-huh.
It is about courage.
Uh-huh.
It's about making gifts for others.
Yes.
Et cetera.
Yeah.
Many.
Yeah. I agree. Okay, you passed the test. You got them all right.
One more thing.
Yes, please.
And it's about doing what your heart tells you.
Yeah, following your heart.
Right.
Yes.
Even if it's complicated.
Right.
And long, strenuous, but will feel good at the end.
Right. Well, it's great. I'm really enjoying this book. And I'm curious, when were you in New Zealand? What year would that have been?
Let's see. I think 13, 2013.
Okay.
Or 14.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a cruise.
Uh-huh.
So
you took a cruise to New Zealand?
No, we took a cruise from Auckland. We flew to Auckland then a cruise around the South Island.
Wow.
Yeah, right. And ended up one day in Sydney. Through the Tasmanian Sea, they dropped us off at the Sydney airport. But that it stuck with me. And it stuck with my characters. So here we are with the book.
So besides the plight of the Kiwi, are there any other environmental issues that struck you on that trip?
Yes. We took a long, arduous car drive and then a buggy drive to a beach that had not been walked on for 10 years.
Wow.
Where they let little blue penguins breed.
Mm-hmm.
And emperor penguins, we saw one walk out of the water up the hill and disappear.
Wow.
That's for my little blue penguins in my book.
Yes.
Because it's not just about the Kiwis. The little blue penguins are under threat of extinction as well. And on this beach that the government set aside for conservation, I saw the butt of a little Kiwi out of a crevice.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Wow.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Wow. So
magical. Mike, yeah, magical.
I bet it was.
When nature can do its thing. Magical.
So you're fairly well traveled. I mean, so if you're originally from Germany?
Yes.
And, you know, studied in France and
wrote a book on human rights in Europe in the 17th century. And somehow rights for animals crept into this book. So it's the same thinking.
Tell us a little bit about that book about human rights in Europe.
Well, I grew up after the Second World War, and our big dream was a united Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And human rights, of course, living in Germany, was an essential feature of education at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I studied a Frenchman who was a Huguenot.
Mm-hmm.
And he got expelled from France due to the Edict from Nantes in 1685, went to Switzerland, and then as an immigrant or refugee went to Berlin and translated a Latin work that dealt with human rights, translated into French.
Wow.
And this book, that French translation was widely spread in Europe because the elite would read French and speak French.
Wow.
And was a forerunner to the American Revolution.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. So that's pretty cool. That's
You know, if I think about it, this book deals with animal rights.
Well, animal rights, yes.
Same thing, right?
Yeah.
And now in New Zealand, we hear rivers have rights. Did you hear that?
I did not hear that.
Rivers have rights.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So talk a little bit about the concept of animal rights, and particularly with respect to New Zealand.
In 1999, the government passed a law about animal rights. They have five rights, and it's in here in... Five rights. Let's see if I can find it. According to this, and Mr. Guinness again read straight from the monitor, he is a learned guy,
mm-hmm.
Animals have five basic rights. Number one, the right to good food and clean water.
Mm.
Number two, the right to a good home.
Mm.
Three, the right to behave naturally according to the way they are made.
Mm.
Four, the right to be treated with kindness.
Mm.
And five, in case they're sick, animals have the right to be taken to the vet to receive medical care.
Wow.
Yeah, right here on page 55.
So the animals in New Zealand get better health care than we do in the U.S.? Perhaps.
On paper. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's
and it ties in with the story, because right. then Lexi said, what? If they have rights, why are they endangered? And
right. Yeah, 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 yeah.
But it all ties in.
Yeah. That's great. So in any of these other places you've been around the world, any observations about nature in those places, or like?
Well, if you want to read book number 3, I'm addressing that in Africa.
Really? I had the sense that the next book would be in Africa because
George is pushing.
He didn't want to go to New Zealand like he wanted to go to Africa. So I knew, yeah.
So what are we going to do? We take him to Africa. But it's not simple.
It's not simple. Wow. So were you already thinking about this? Had you already plotted that Africa trip out while you were? Yeah. Wow,
no,
that's
good. I'm doing it now.
Yeah.
So because I love projects.
Mm.
I love to put together, and I hope there will be more songs with the Africa book as well.
Well, I'll tell you why. Why don't we hear this other song from your daughter Julia did, Julia
and Hoffman. James, her husband,
and her husband.
Yes, the composer. Yeah, it's called "Get Together."
Okay, and again, this is the intrinsic to the plot of the book. I
mean, yes, it will be the school anthem.
Okay.
The Stoat School Anthem.
Okay, let's hear it.
It doesn't matter if you are from the wilderness or from the mountains, underground of the sea or the town, sing along with me. And if you from the tops of trees or the sands of the desert, of the night, of the day, come and play, join the band with me.
Where you're from,
there is nobody lost.
right. That was another beautiful song from Dr. Othmer's, companion to Dr. Othmer's book, Adventure New Zealand Beneath the Totaras, and that one was called We Are Together?
We Get Together in All Weather.
Oh, We Get Together in All Weather. Dr. Othmer, what's your website? Or
it's zieglindaothmer.com. SIEGLINDEOTHMER.com.
And is that the best way if someone wants to get a hold of you? Is that the best way?
Or my email.
And your email is?
The S, like in Zieglinda, C, like in cat, OTHMER@KC.RR.com.
Great. Great. Congratulations on this wonderful book.
Thank you, Mike. You know,
again, the second book with these wonderful, lovable characters. The third book is in the works.
Fourth one, too.
Perhaps even the fourth. Wow. So yeah. We'll have to stay tuned for that. And congratulations so much. Also, Dr. Othmer is going to be on ArtSpeak Radio, not this week, but next week, August 8th.
With Maria.
Maria Vasquez Boyd. And lots going on. Anything else you're doing with these books?
I would like to go to schools and present them to the teachers and kids so they can have some fun.
That sounds like a wonderful idea. Well, again, Dr. Othmer, I can't thank you enough for coming
in,
Mike. And the wonderful work. I'm always excited when I get to read a book and then interrogate the author. So thank you so much. We're going to play a little report from a little feature from a community radio station in Sarasota, Florida, followed by our calendar of events and This Week in Water. And the podcast will be up shortly. You're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Throughout history, amazing stories of unamazing people have captivated the news. This is Modern Radio Theater. I'm your host, Cliff Note. The United States Congress has debated climate change since 1988. In 2012, Congress passed the National Flood Insurance Program Extension Act for the many communities now facing increased flooding from sea level rise and heavy rains.
Oh Lord, am I really hearing this?
Climate change is caused by cutting down trees and carbon-based emissions going into the atmosphere. Scientists are seeking a planet to colonize as the new Earth. Many federal and state lawmakers just do not want to get involved.
Don't always know what I'm talking about. Feels like I'm living in the middle of doubt.
What kind of future will children face? Will they be able to play outside and enjoy nature?
Hello, mother. Hello, father. Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining, and they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining.
What kind of future will our grandchildren and great-grandchildren face if the families do not get involved and stand up for their children? Climate change has had effects on our environment. Glaciers have shrunk. Winter is shorter in many areas. Earth is experiencing warmer years, accelerated sea level rising, and more intense heat waves.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out.
Weathercasters are pleading for government support.
Why can't you see what you do? Don't believe a word I say.
More precipitation is projected for northern states, less for the Southwest and California.
Saturday in the park.
More droughts and heat waves are expected. Hurricanes will be stronger and more frequent as serious storms pound the USA.
Goodbye to you, my trusted friend. We've known each other since we were 9 or 10.
Faith Paradise put up a parking lot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone?
Sea levels will rise. Coastal communities will be flooded. People will have to change their lifestyle.
Now we live beneath the waves in our yellow submarine.
Earth's temperature will continue to rise. And raise and be risen.
When you hot, you hot, I say yeah. When you're hot, you're hot. When you're not, you're not.
The future looks grim.
I can't get no satisfaction.
The earth could become too hot for humans. So how about it, friends, if we can reduce destroying nature and use more clean energy, we can reduce the climate change effects and save our planet.
The sun was shining down, the water felt so warm. Let all those rays coming down for free heat the water and the air with their energy.
Yay!
Solar power to the people, what a bright idea.
Blue skies smiling at me. Nothing but blue skies. Do I see blue birds singing song? Nothing but blue.
Write to your state and federal lawmakers and ask for changes to be made. I'm Cliff Note. This program comes to you from Sarasota, Florida. Contact me at sarmusic@live.com.
What's that sound, you ask? It's the sound of one-time-use trash. People get bottled water because of hydration, convenience, and the claim of better taste and quality. Truth is, there's usually no difference between bottled and tap water. The healthier choice is to get a cool, reusable bottle made of lined aluminum, steel, glass, or special plastic that won't break off chemical bits like the plastic used in disposable bottles. Get healthy and keep your world from becoming a big junk pile. Disposables dead. Brought to you by J.C. Herman High School and 90.1 FM KKFI.
This is Teresa Wilkie, and I'm going to bring you the date book on Eco Radio KC. There's a Kansas River cleanup on Tuesday, July 31st at 5 p.m. in Lawrence, Kansas, sponsored by the City of Lawrence Parks and Rec Department, United by Blue, and Sunflower Outdoor and Bike Shop. They'll meet on Locust Street at 5 p.m. On Thursday, August 2nd, 2018, Green Party Kansas City membership meeting is at the Westport Presbyterian Church, 201 Westport Road at 7 p.m. On Monday, August 6th, there's a free event at Village Church, 6641 Mission Road, Prairie Village, Kansas. The speaker, Dr. Chris King, retired U.S. Army Brigadier General, will speak on the American environmental crisis. Thursday, August 7, there's a garden photography happy hour from 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at the Kansas City Community Garden Beanstalk Garden, 6917 Kensington Avenue, Kansas City, Missouri. Tickets are required for light food and drink, and those are available at KCCG. On August 25th, Missouri Department of Conservation is offering a free series of three-hour guided float trips of the Missouri River, starting that day 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., noon to 3 p.m., or 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. There will be a mandatory orientation on August 14 at three different times, 4 to 5:30 p.m., 5:30 to 7 p.m., or 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Burr Oaks Woods Nature Center, 1401 Northwest Park Road, Blue Springs, Missouri. Participants in the float trips must be older than 18, dress for the weather. Reservations are required. Call Lisa Lacombe at 816-228-3766. Finally, the Lawrence, Kansas Electric Vehicle Showcase will be a free event co-sponsored by the Kansas Sierra Club Wakarusa Group, the Sustainability Action Network, and the Solar Powered Community Mercantile Co-op. That will be on Saturday, September 15th in the parking lot at the Community Mercantile, 901 Iowa, Lawrence, Kansas. Electric vehicles scheduled for display include the Nissan Leaf, the Tesla, Toyota Prius Prime, Chevy Bolt, and Chevy Volt. Come one, come all.
Earth Overshoot Day is now August 1st, and that's not good. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Tensions may be increasing among Turkey, Syria, and Iraq over water. A Saudi newspaper reports that when the current wars in the region end, the dispute over the two major river basins in the area will become politically volatile and may use water as a weapon.
Both rivers originate in Turkey. The Euphrates flows south into Syria and the Tigris into Iraq. Management of the rivers has been regionally contested for about 50 years.
Tensions are rising now because Turkey is going ahead with a long-planned major project to build 22 dams and 19 power plants that could cut the water flows by as much as half, according to Newsweek.
Recent drought and shortages sparked protests in Syria, which in part led to the country's civil war. There's also been recent protests in Iraq and Iran over water.
Turkey, under its leader Recep Tayyip Erdogan, has maintained its dominance over the two rivers in the absence of any cohesive Iraqi and Syrian strategy.
Al Jazeera reported last month that the Turkish ambassador to Iraq said the Tigris will flow without interruption. Nevertheless, the amount of water in Iraq's rivers has fallen by at least 40% in recent decades.
Well, the likelihood of either war-weary Iraq or Syria engaging in armed conflict over water is low, the suffering of people in the two increases, as does the possibility of water being used as a political weapon by Turkey and as a cause of instability in its two neighbors.
The Los Angeles Department of Water and Power is proposing a plan to reuse water that flows on the Colorado River through Hoover Dam as a giant battery of sorts.
The New York Times reports that the agency would build a pipeline downstream of the dam at a cost of $3 billion that would take water out of the river and pump it back up to Lake Mead, where it would be used again to turn Hoover Dam's turbines to generate power.
The system would use solar and wind energy exclusively to pump the water back up to the reservoir, where it would be stored.
Solar and wind farms sometimes produce more electricity than consumers need. Using that excess to pump the water back into the reservoir seems like a way to harness renewable energy that present technology has no method to store in, say, a giant lithium battery.
But there are some issues. For example, people in cities downstream in Arizona and Nevada worry about lowering the flow of the Colorado River if Los Angeles wants to take more out and pump it back up.
Environmentalists say that the project could impair the already meager water flow into the mostly dry river delta that no longer connects to the Sea of Cortez in Mexico.
Still, Los Angeles Mayor Gil Garcetti said that there's no bigger battery in their system than Hoover Dam.
Of all the places touched by humans on our planet, the oceans seem to be the least affected. However, a new study concludes that only a little more than 13% of them can truly be considered as wilderness.
Most oceans still considered pristine are in the Arctic and Antarctic, or around remote Pacific islands. Those untouched areas are becoming increasingly rare as fishing and shipping fleets expand their reach.
The study done by the University of California at Santa Barbara and the University of Queensland says that most remaining marine wilderness is vulnerable to being lost because it's unprotected.
If not conserved, those wild areas containing a diversity of species will disappear within 50 years. One of the authors noted that just knowing wilderness exists provides value to people, even if they never visit.
And while humanity encroaches on wild areas of the ocean, we are also consuming the planet's resources in increasingly destructive amounts. A study shows that we have consumed a year's worth of resources in just 212 days.
Earth Overshoot Day marks the date each year when humanity uses more resources than the planet can renew in an entire year. Now Overshoot Date is August 1st, moving up 2 days. 30 years ago, it was in the middle of October.
As explained in Fortune magazine, this means that for the remaining 5 months of 2018, humanity will be using more natural resources than the Earth can renew.
The study, done by the international think tank Global Footprint Network, concludes that to maintain our current appetite, we would need the equivalent of 1.7 Earths.
While the current rate of consuming food, fish, minerals, forests, and fossil fuels is not sustainable, the study says it is reversible.
For example, replacing 50% of meat consumption with a vegetarian diet would ease the overshoot date by 5 days, and efficiency improvements in buildings and industry could push back the date by 3 weeks.
But the most gains would come from reducing our carbon footprint, which could have a whopping 3-month effect on delaying the date.
And finally this week, the phrase surfing the web could take on a whole new meaning because, according to a study out this month, much of the infrastructure that supports the internet could be underwater within 15 years.
Researchers from the University of Wisconsin-Madison and the University of Oregon found that more than 4,000 miles of fiber optic cables and more than 1,100 node stations across America's coastal cities are at risk from sea level rise within the next 2 decades, with New York, Miami, and Seattle considered to be the most vulnerable.
But the effects wouldn't be confined to those areas. They would ripple across the web, potentially disrupting global communications because the data centers that store equipment and redistribute internet signals are in coastal areas with fluctuating tides.
The researchers suggest that rather than trying to reinforce infrastructure, the best long-term solution is to relocate it to higher ground because keeping the ocean at bay would be hard. That burden would largely fall on the networks of CenturyLink, Inteliquent, and AT&T, whose buried assets are at the highest risk.
The authors add that their findings should put both industry and government on notice and serve as a wake-up call. For the rest of us, it would certainly awaken anyone who hasn't been paying attention to the threats posed by climate change if their internet went down. This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association, highlighting the latest cost-effective strategies to manage aging infrastructure at the Water Infrastructure Conference and Expo, October 28th. 8th to 31st in Atlanta. Learn more at awwa.org/H2O Infocon.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.